Although much of California's flora is iconic, few visitors or residents might guess that in the beginning there were very few trees in the state at all. In the book Trees in Paradise, A California History, Jared Farmer takes us on a horticultural history of our nation's most populous state and sets out to document the repeated rise and fall of the state's fortunes by way of the trees that came to dominate the landscape. Jared Farmer is a Utah native and former Californian and author of On Zion's Mount, A Landscape History, awarded the prestigious Parkman Prize for Literary Excellence. He teaches history at Stony Brook University. It's a great pleasure to welcome him to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
As a former Californian, what got you thinking about these trees in paradise?
Probably began with my father, who grew up outside of L.A. and had these kind of nostalgic memories of the backyard garden of his home outside of Los Angeles. And he actually built a greenhouse in Utah where we grew up just so he could try to cultivate, not very successfully, but try to cultivate figs and citrus. And every winter we would anticipate when Grandma would send the red-stained box of pomegranates. That's before you could find, you know, Palm Wonderful in every supermarket in America. It was a real treat, the way that I think oranges used to be 100 years ago. So that was part of it. The other part was when I finally moved to California as a graduate student, and I actually lived on the campus of Stanford University for some years. And that is an incredible landscape of trees. It has these magnificent relict oaks. It has a whole eucalyptus belt that was planted back in the day. It has a citrus courtyard. It has a redwood tree on its seal. It has a dancing tree as its mascot. So I think all in all, this living at Stanford just made me think about how trees are a part of our landscape and how they have a history. And they're not human, they're biological, but then they're so entwined in the history of our landscapes and our lives. So that's, I guess, the short story of how I got into it.
You divide the book into four sections, each exploring a different tree. Of the four, redwoods, eucalypts, citruses, and palms. And you make the point that only the redwoods are really indigenous to the state.
That's right. There is one species of palm native to the state of California, the California fan palm, the one you find down near Palm Springs. But almost all of the palms you see in the state are not native in place, and most of the species are not native. And I structured the book this way in part because I think it reflects the social landscape of California. California is the most populous state, but hardly anybody who grew up in California was born there or goes back in their family more than one or two or three generations. Almost everybody came from somewhere else. There are still indigenous people in California, some people who trace their ancestry to the gold rush, but a tiny, tiny fraction. So it's a incredibly cosmopolitan, diverse state, but it's a state full of newcomers. And if you look at the floral landscape, it's like that too. It's the most cosmopolitan vegetation in all of North America, and it's an incredible, diverse array of trees and shrubs, but they almost all come from someplace else. So I thought this was kind of a fun, interesting way to explore California diversity through its plants, but sort of in a sideways way examine its social history as well.
What is equally interesting is the rise and fall nature of this story that is repeated. Rise and fall, yeah. Rise and fall, rise yeah. and fall.
Yeah, and it's sort of like inverse with the native and then in the non-native trees. So, you know, redwoods were decimated through very exploitive and wasteful logging in the late 19th, early 20th centuries, and have made a big comeback through national parks, state parks, but also through better, more sustainable harvesting practices. And in that way, it's a hopeful story, even though we lost a lot of the great old ancient trees in the process. There are more redwoods and sequoias today in California than there were 100 years ago. So that's sort of a fall and a rise. With the three non-native tree types I talk about, the eucalyptus, the citrus, and the palms, it is in the long run a story of incredible fluorescence rise and then recently fall. So, you know, Southern California, Orange County, there are no oranges in Orange County. There are no oranges in Los Angeles County. They've all been moved to the San Joaquin Valley. There are still citrus in California, but far fewer than they used to be, and they've all been moved to a different part of the state. Eucalyptus trees are dying. They were planted by the millions and billions, but they're sort of reaching the end of their life cycle, and now they're a very contested tree. Many people hate them, think of them as noxious, as health hazards, fire hazards, as non-natives, and don't want to replace them or just want to get rid of them. Palm trees, the iconic sort of sidewalk tree of California, especially Los Angeles, are also ending the end of their life cycle and are beset with various kind of fungal and insect problems, as are eucalyptus trees. So for a bunch of reasons, these three trees that sort of represented American settlement and all this energy went into kind of staging this landscape revolution with these trees is sort of, I think, sort of in its twilight phase. And, I mean, California is not going to lose trees, but these trees that for, you know, a century, century and a half represented California are sort of in a period of decline, even as the great native trees, I think, are, you could argue, sort of at the beginning of a comeback, you know, unless climate change changes everything. But right. At the moment, I think redwoods is sort of a hopeful story.
And redwoods really being the odd tree out here because, as you write in the book, they came to flourish again thanks to a growing environmental consciousness in the state in the latter half of the 20th century. Why do you think that that particular movement did not include the other types of trees, did not include the palms, did not include the eucalyptus?
Well, actually, they did early on. If you look at sort of the heyday of American environmentalism in the 1970s, back when environmentalism was a bipartisan, you know, it was Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, Richard Nixon, arguably our greatest environmental president. In the 70s, you do find people rallying around endangered eucalyptus trees, endangered in the sense that, you know, they were threatened by development. Even in Los Angeles, people rallying around palm trees that are slated to be cut down for road development, that kind of thing. It really shifts by, you know, the end of the 20th century. You're right. And there's a huge, and people may remember, incredibly controversial and sometimes farcical scenes of, you know, tree sitters and people, you know, locked, you know, but chained to trees in Northern California. I think there's something about multi-millennial trees or the idea of old growth, ancient trees, trees, you know, as old as Christ, that kind of thing that really excites people's imaginations. And trees that are only 100 years, 150 years old, on the one hand, I think it's kind of comforting to think of trees on that scale because it's more relatable, and it's sort of like, hey, like these trees, they're like me. If my ancestors came here after the gold rush, that they're a part of this built landscape. But it also means that you can easily sort of turn them into a different kind of symbol, like they're a symbol of change that's unwelcome or not native or unnatural. And I don't know, these redwood trees, for better or for worse, are pure symbols of, like, nature. And even though, like, what we have left, these, like, tiny sort of pocket parks of really old, tall trees, is not really very natural, but they become these kind of symbols of this kind of primeval California, you know, before the fall, you know, before the gold rush and, you know, before mammon. And, you know, people celebrate the gold rush, but it's also Californians typically kind of look at it as this kind of fall from grace, which I tend to resist as a historian, but it's still, I think, a powerful narrative. And redwood trees sort of represent this kind of earlier, more Edenic state before the gold rush.
You make the point that when it comes to palm trees, they're actually highly impractical. They're a difficult tree. You write in the book, palms have been planted here for what they mean, not what they do, or rather what they mean is what they do.
Yeah, I think of them as basically aesthetic infrastructure. They are primarily important for real estate promoters, tourist promoters, people who want to enhance their property values. There's a reason why you find them at malls all over America, not just California, often, you know, in air-conditioned, climate-controlled atria. I mean, there is a small date palm industry in the Coachella Valley, but most of the great majority, the millions and millions of trees, palm trees you see from Sacramento to San Francisco all the way down to San Diego, have no fruit that humans can eat. They produce very little shade. You know, you can't hang a hammock from them. You can't climb them. They don't really do much in terms of what people think of trees doing, like, I don't know, casting shade, cleaning the atmosphere, providing fruit. But they are symbols. They're signs. You can think of them as like big billboards in the sense of advertising the California dream. And that's kind of what their purpose was. And I think at some point, it just became this like habit of Californians to sort of plant these trees to kind of represent their aspiration for a California dream, or to signal to tourists, like, you know, come have a piece of it or taste it, or to signal that I've made it. You know, some of the oldest palm trees in the state are actually on Nob Hill in San Francisco. You know, where like the really rich, you know, robber barons of the 19th century built their homes, and they would like put these palm trees on wheels on trains, you know, bring them up from the south and like transplanted to the middle of foggy San Francisco just to kind of announce that, yeah, I made it. You know, I'm super rich. I achieved the California dream.
When it comes to citrus trees, they were such a part of California, and these images of the citrus groves drew tourists as well. And ultimately, it was agribusiness and horticapitalism that came in and replaced that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the history of agriculture in California, there was a kind of reformist or progressive message in horticulture in the 19th century, this idea being that you don't need these giant agribusiness farms because these fruit trees are such a high-value crop that if you can market them successfully, you could actually have a pretty small spread that could be run by a family, so you don't have to rely on, you know, seasonal migrant laborers, and you can have a lighter footprint on the land. They didn't use the word sustainability, but they were sort of thinking that way. But you're right, in the long run, that was largely co-opted by agribusiness. So almost all of the tree crops in California today, you know, the olives and the almonds and the walnuts, the pistachios, the pomegranates, on and on, are owned by these giant concerns. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and it relies on, you know, undocumented Mexican laborers for the most part. It's a fairly exploitive an intensive social and environmental operation. So, yeah, in that sense, it is, I think, kind of a sobering story and something we should all remember when we, you know, enjoy our almond milk or our pistachios or whatever it is. I could go on and on, but I'll stop there.
So where are we now when it comes to the story of trees in the state?
Well, I think it is kind of a moment of reflection, or it can, because, again, I think these kind of iconic trees of the settlement era, especially, you know, eucalyptus trees, citrus, and palms, are sort of in that twilight phase near the end of their natural life cycle. Their lives are kind of on a scale of like ours. They're not like redwoods and sequoias. I mean, those are awe-inspiring because they can live 1,000, 2,000 years, but it's pretty hard to relate to that. You know, a palm tree, you know, might live 100, 150 years. We can relate to that. And it's, in a sense, it represents the U.S. period since conquest, since 1848. And it could be that Californians, after 1848, went overboard, that some of these trees they brought in, you know, it was like an ecological mistake, perhaps. But on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of beauty and a lot of economic worth that came from this as well. I think in the long run, what you're going to see is, in the 21st century, still an incredible diversity of trees in California, but maybe a little more thought going into, like, the long-term consequences. You know, what is the best place to plant trees? What are the best species? You know, when you bring a tree in, you also are often bringing in insects and diseases that will accompany these things. And just this kind of longer-term thinking that was not as much in evidence in the past. But I think California, even though Los Angeles will probably at some point lose its super tall sky duster palm trees to catch the last rays of the sunset, it may lose that, but it'll still be an incredible arboreal landscape unlike anything else in America. So I think it'll be different, but I think it'll still be beautiful and maybe a little more thoughtfully designed. So in a sense, I look forward to it, even though it's going to be different.
The name of the book is Trees in Paradise, A California History. The book is published by Norton. Jared Farmer, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Trees in Paradise, A California History. The book is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.